Are you feeling Christmassy? I think one of the big reasons why people come to a service like this is to feel Christmassy, isn't it? I think I'm right in that. That was certainly the reason why I used to go to carol services in years gone by, to feel Christmassy, to get that sort of special Christmas feeling. But what do we mean by that, feeling Christmassy? I think we mean a warm feeling in the middle of winter, or something like that. That feeling that somehow everything is okay, after all. It's a sort of escapism, isn't it, really? I think Bill Murray hits it on the head, as so often he does, in that film Scrooged, which is one of my favourites, I don't know if you've seen it. But he says, Christmas Eve, it's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer, when we smile a little easier, when we cheer a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we're the people that we always hoped we would be. That's the feeling. That's the feeling we want, isn't it? But what about the other side? You know, the other feelings that Christmas brings as well. The flip side, if you like. The crazy work stress. You know, deadlines. Targets to be met, colleagues off work, trying to get everything sorted out so you can have those couple of days off. And not just at work, but busyness in general, isn't there? So many things to sort out, so many things to pay for, debt. And then there's the flip side of the cosy family Christmas as well, isn't there? Missing people. That song that we hear playing in the shopping centres every year. It's going to be lonely this Christmas by those Midland-born Elvis impersonators Mud. It still gets played because it resonates somehow. Grief feels more raw at this time of year. Family disputes, fights in general, can be worse at this time of year. Moral failure and guilt that often comes at this time. You know, I wish I hadn't said that. I wish I hadn't done that. An illness can feel so much worse in the cold. Is that real too? Is that feeling Christmassy? There's a little town not far from here in Hertfordshire called Cold Christmas. I think that's a good name for all of that stuff. The flip side of feeling Christmassy. Cold Christmas. Cold Christmas is real. That's the problem. That's what bothers us. That's why feeling Christmassy is fun, but we know really it's not enough. It's only escapism when all is said and done. Because when we're back out in the cold wind, the warm feelings blow away, don't they? No one feels Christmassy when the tree is gone and you're back in an empty flat. Or when you're back at work on the first day of the new block. Well, tonight, I want you to see that the Christmas message, as the Bible tells it, is not just cozy escapism. It's real. It deals with the world as it really is. Cold Christmas and all. You see, you may have noticed that already in that first reading we've just heard from the book of Genesis. You might find the language a bit strange, but you can't deny it describes the world as it really is. So we've heard in that reading of relationship pain, a man blaming his wife, the beginning of the battle of the sexes, even domestic violence, as we hear of the woman desiring to get one over on her husband and him responding with cruelty, pain between man and woman, and between the generations as well, the pain involved in giving birth and bringing up children, relationship pain, and work pain as well. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food. There's a number of us here who can vouch for that. That's true, isn't it? Busyness, tiredness, stress, it's all there. And then there's death itself. Dust you are, and to dust you shall return. It's the real world, as it really is. Cold Christmas and all. But what's distinct about this Bible account is, it doesn't just tell us how it is, it tells us why. It says it all comes from somewhere. It says there's a root cause for all the pain. Something has happened to put the world out of joint. There's been a rupture in a relationship. The fact that since the beginning, people have turned against their Creator, distrusting His word, kicking against His right to rule, throwing His fatherly love back in His face. That, says the Bible, that's the reason for the darkness and the pain. You can't reject your Creator and expect to keep hold of His creation. The reason that relationships can now be painful is because the relationship that matters most, that relationship between God and His people, has been broken. That's why the world is broken. Because we broke it from the centre outwards. A bit like a stone hitting your windscreen, slap bang in the middle at 70 miles an hour. The cracks run outwards. The cracks run through everything. That's why life can be so cold. Question, of course, is, what can be done about it? If the whole of life is out of joint, is there some way in which it can be put back in? Is there an answer to cold Christmas? An answer that goes deeper than just trying to hide away in the warm for a little while? Well, that reading from we heard from Genesis, it comes right at the start of the Bible. And the rest of the Bible is the answer to that question of what has God done about it. So as this evening goes on, and as you hear the readings progressing through the story of the Bible, as you sing the carols, don't just sit back, feel Christmassy, and try to forget. Think. Because here, among the candles and the soft music, is a solid, hard-edged message. Something real. Something that doesn't just blow away in the cold wind. Something that gets to the root of the problem. Something that can deal with the dark side of feeling Christmassy. Don't miss it. Did you spot the answer to the question we were asking? The question of what could be done about cold Christmas? You heard it as we've gone on. That question of what has God done about it? It's pretty clear, isn't it? The message that we've heard throughout is that God has come for you. He's stepped right into the broken world, into the coldness and the pain. He's done it all Himself. Did you hear that line in the reading that Giles just read there? That word, that line that says, "The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us." That is earth-shattering. Or, to put it more correctly, that is world-mending truth. The Word became flesh. The Word, who John has already told us, is God. God the one and only. God the Son of the Father became flesh. Flesh. It's not exactly a very nice and poetic way of saying it, is it? You know, it's messy, it's earthy, it's real. God became meat. You know, when you say the divine became human, it makes it sound rarefied and religious. The Bible's more gritty. God became meat. That's meant to sound shocking, I think. You know, if you don't see the shock in it, then chances are you don't really understand it. Because, you know, if you're from a Muslim background or a Jewish background, you'll understand the shock here. This isn't sentimentality. It's not fuzzy and soft focus. It's tangible and real. It's solid and hard-edged, like you and me are solid and hard-edged. Flesh. Real God. Really here. Really one of us. You see, this is the antidote to all those countless imaginary versions of God that people come up with. People are very, very good at coming up with wrong versions of God. Gods that suit us. Gods that fit with our lifestyle and fall into line with our agenda. But whenever we imagine God, we get it wrong. That's why I want to be really careful to not give you the impression that the Christian message, the Christmas message, is just, hey, here's some good news. The God that you thought was there really is there. Because the God that you thought was there is very probably shaped by your imagination. And whenever we imagine God, we get him wrong. When you think of the major religions and the major philosophies that have held sway down through the years, I think it's safe to say for most of them that their gods are either big and aloof, or else small and nasty. Richard Dawkins is always good for a quote. He said in an interview to Christians this last week, he said, "Your God is a bully. Who's to say he's not right? How would we know? Look hard into the manger. What do you see there? You see God. God, not as a philosophical construct or a figment of your imagination, but God as he really is. The Word made flesh. The Creator, come here. God walking into history." That's why John says the Word here. The Word's a communication, aren't they? This is God communicating himself to us. Showing himself. He's not a mystery anymore. He's shown himself in the form we can most clearly understand. Human. So John says, no one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. We've seen him, says John, so we're telling you. Look hard into the manger, and you see God as he is. And you see yourself as you are. You in your weakness and your brokenness, fragile and vulnerable. You as you really are, flesh, human. Look into the manger and you see that God, as he is, has come for you as you are. Christmas carols get it so right, don't they? The ones we've sung, you know, see how in the manger lies he who built the starry skies. God of God, light from light, he abhors not the virgin's womb. It's God who climbed down from the heights of glory and laid himself in an animal trough so that when he grew up, all of our sins might be laid on him. That is God's way of restoring this broken relationship with himself. That's his way of rescue from death and hell. The hopes and fears of all the years I met in that manger in Bethlehem. One of the centres of global Christianity now is China. In the last few decades, the message of Jesus has exploded across that land, and there are millions of Christians there now. Back in the mid-19th century, things were a bit different. When a Yorkshireman named Hudson Taylor went out there to tell as many people as he could about Jesus. And one man who was converted through his ministry was a Chinese Confucian scholar. And this ex-Confucianist, he used to tell a story about his conversion, explaining it to others. He said it like this. He said, "A man fell into a dark and slimy pit. Try as he might, it was impossible to pull himself out. One day, Confucius himself came past the pit and said, 'Poor man, if only he'd listened to me, he wouldn't have ended up in there in the first place. Sometime later, the Buddha came past. Looking down at the man, he said, "Poor man, just come on up here and I'll help you." And we might echo that with any other religion that we thought of. And we might add some others into the story at this point. We might say, well, the feeling Christmassy person with his bright festive jumper who looks into the pit and says, go on, give us a smile. It's not so bad. Or the modern British secularist who says, it's your pit. Be proud of it. Or the scientist who says, you know, get studying that slime really carefully and you might be able to work out how you got in there in the first place. Or the entertainment industry that says, you know, here's an iPad. Have a go at Angry Birds. You'll forget about the pit in no time. The man's story went on. He said, and then Jesus Christ walked past and he said, poor man, and he jumped into the pit and lifted him out. It's good news, this Christmas message. It's the sort of thing that should make us smile. It's not escapism. It's not a nice thought on a Christmas card quickly forgotten. It's a real life rescue. A real tangible God. Not one that you have to aim at and miss, but one who has come to you. Jesus Christ. The Word made flesh. God with us. A Saviour. Have a look at the candles. You see them? They're everywhere, aren't they? Have a look at them. They look great, don't they? They look better because it's dark. Cold Christmas is real. The pain of the world is a fact. The Bible doesn't hide from that. But it's not the end of the story. The message of Jesus is good news of great joy because, as the carol says, this is a world of sin and he's come into it. He's come for you. He's come for you. Now, if you're not a follower of Jesus, and I need to say, coming to a carol service doesn't automatically make you one, well, then it may be news to you to say that this Christmas message is a message you need to respond to. You can't just leave it. God has come for you. He wants all of you. That's something that demands a response. To just walk away and leave it, well, that's a response of sorts. It's to say no. But think about it. Talk to me about it. Talk to someone you came with. Come along to one of our regular services. The details are on the back of the sheets. Find out more. But don't let it fall on deaf ears. Because just feeling Christmassy is not enough.